Welcome to The Reference Desk, a podcast where two librarians take you down the rabbit hole of the topics that have bewitched us.
So adjust the chain on your reading glasses, button up your favorite cardigan, and follow us punk-ass book jockeys through the stacks to The Reference Desk.
Welcome back to part two of our Price is Right episode. If you haven't had a chance to listen to part one yet, we mostly talked about Bob Barker's time as the host on The Price is Right, but there are some behind-the-scenes stuff and people that I introduced you to in part one that will be helpful in understanding what we're going to talk about in the second part. So if you haven't had a chance yet, I recommend going back and listening to that. We left off with Bob Barker's retirement and final show, so that's where we're going to pick up in part two with finding Bob Barker's replacement. All right, let's go ahead and jump in.
There were several big-name hopefuls on the short list to be Barker's replacement, including Rosie O'Donnell, who I think would have been good.
I think so, too.
Mm-hmm. Like, when I read that, I was like, that I could totally see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Might have been a better choice.
Yeah. But in the end, the job went to Drew Carey. At the time, Carey was hosting the short-lived CBS game show Power of 10. And like I said, like, I don't know if anyone could have received a positive response right off the bat.
That's true. Yeah.
But the reviews of his first episodes were not great.
Yeah.
He had readily agreed to continue Bob Barker's famous sign-off of help control the pet population, have your pet spayed or neutered. And he continued to use the iconic skinny microphone.
So weird.
I guess it was because if they had used like the, like, you know, a traditional shorter fat one, like it blocked the contestants' faces. So they used that weird skinny ones that you could like see more of people's reactions and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so weird. But that's basically where the similarities ended. Mm-hmm. He was a totally different host. And for a group of hardcore fans who had spent the past 35 years watching Bob Barker, that change was really hard.
Yeah.
And then after they wrapped taping on the final season of Drew's first season, longtime producer Roger Dobkowitz was fired.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it wasn't like a we're going in different directions kind of thing. It was like he was completely blindsided. Everyone was completely blindsided.
Whoa.
Yeah. And the most avid fans of the show were livid.
Yeah.
Because like Bob Barker had left on his terms. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, they weren't happy he was leaving, but he was 83. It was going to happen.
Yeah, like he could retire. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But they took a lot of comfort in the fact that Roger Dobkowitz, who had literally built the show with Bob Barker, was still there.
Yeah.
So when he was terminated, it was just like a huge blow to the Price is Right fan community.
Yeah.
So they started filming the 2008 season, and the atmosphere was just kind of very tense. The people who had been there forever were super pissed off, and the new people who had just joined the show felt an insane amount of pressure now to prove themselves.
Sure. Yeah.
So CBS had brought on Mike Richards as the new producer, and if that name sounds familiar, it's because he was recently the subject of much scrutiny when he basically named himself the new host of Jeopardy. And then a bunch of lawsuits from former employees on The Price is Right surfaced, along with a bunch of offensive remarks that he had made on a podcast. And he ended up stepping down.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he was the one that they brought in to replace Roger Dobkowitz.
Oh, no.
And he actually had auditioned to be the host to replace Bob Barker, but
he
did not make it. And apparently tried to rekindle those dreams on Jeopardy.
Oh, no.
Okay, so like I mentioned briefly earlier, balancing the budget on The Price is Right is kind of an art form. So it involves choosing the right prizes for the right games and then mixing the games up within the episode. So there's harder ones, easier ones. Mm-hmm. You don't want everyone to lose, but you also don't want everyone to win because then that'd be a super expensive show.
Yes.
But on September 22nd, 2008, it seemed like everyone was on a hot streak.
Oh, no. Ooh.
So the show starts, and one of the first four contestants called to contestants row was a man named Terry Neese.
Okay.
So Terry Neese was 60 years old, and he was there with his wife, Linda. He'd spent many years as a TV meteorologist, and he was really good at that job. He won two regional Emmy Awards. But then him and Linda moved to Las Vegas, and he got a job working the night shift at a casino. And his job was to find people who were counting cards.
Ah, okay.
So he got really, really good at learning the patterns that would tip him off to if someone was counting cards.
Sure. Okay.
And then after he'd done this for months, he kind of was curious, like, if he could learn how to do it.
Yeah.
So he started practicing at his kitchen table, and he got really good.
Okay.
In May 2008, Linda and Terry had to put their beloved dog, Crystal, down. And the grief was really hard on them, and they wanted something to distract themselves with.
Sure.
And one of Linda's friends had just gotten back from a trip to Los Angeles and gone to a taping of The Price is Right. And she was like, it was so fun.
Aww.
So they get this idea to figure out a way to win at The Price is Right.
Yeah, okay.
Terry was always really good at finding patterns, first in like weather patterns and then
in
the casino card counting. And Linda was also just very good with numbers in general. So for the next 4 months, they watched recordings of the show and made detailed spreadsheets and notes about the items' prices and all of the games.
Mm-hmm.
And then on September 22nd, 2008, they woke up early and waited outside the gates at Television City in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
There were only three people in front of them in line.
Ooh, okay.
And they were filming the episode that would air on December 8th.
Okay.
So Terry goes down to contestants row. The first one bid item was a 10-foot sailboat.
Mm.
And a contestant named David had the closest bid. He went up and played the pricing game any number. And he won a Pontiac G6 sedan worth $21,836.
Okay.
The second one bid item was a digital camera. Remember when those were a thing?
Yes, they were a big thing. Oh, no.
I remember Anna had one that was like really low quality, but because it was so low quality, it made everyone look flawless.
Yes.
We're always like, Anna, bring your camera. We all look so good in those pictures. So Zachary won, and he ends up playing the pricing game. It's in the bag for a chance to win up to $16,000. And this is one of those games where after each like little reveal, the contestant has to decide if they're going to stop and keep the money or risk it all and go on in the hopes of winning a bigger prize. So Zachary stopped when he'd won $2,000, but as Drew is like revealing the rest of the bags, if he had kept on going, he would have won all $16,000.
Oh my gosh.
He had just made like flawless choices.
Yeah.
Okay, so the third one-bid item was a ceramic big green egg grill and smoker. You know, those like ugly green grills.
Yeah.
And Terry bid $1,175, which was a perfect bid.
Ooh, okay.
So he won the $500 bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And he played the pricing game Switch, which just they show you two prizes with two prices and you have to decide if they stay there or if they switch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was exercise bikes and an iMac.
Okay.
But he lost. He later said that he couldn't tell that there were two exercise bikes because they were like one behind the other.
Oh.
And that he wasn't super familiar with computers. And he thought that a terabyte of RAM sounded like it would be really, really expensive.
Okay.
Okay. So then it was time for the first showcase showdown. And Terry spun 90 cents on the first spin.
Ooh.
Really good.
Yeah, that's a good one.
The next two people spin over. So Terry goes on to the showcase.
Okay.
Okay. Second half of the show.
Mm.
The fourth one-bid item was a collection of beach gear. And a contestant named Jamie won. And they played the game Swap Meet for a dinette set, a pair of bicycles, an espresso machine, mm-hmm. Louboutin shoes, and a Prada Ooh. Purse.
Okay.
And Jamie won all the prizes.
Wow.
The fifth one-bit item was a deluxe washer and dryer set. And a contestant named Sharon won and played the game One Away to win a 2009 Pontiac Vibe.
Okay.
The sixth one-bit item was a Burberry coat. Julie won, and she played Pick a Number for the chance to win a TV and entertainment center.
Oh, my goodness.
She changed her pick at the last second after she heard people in the audience calling out to her, and she mm-hmm. won.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. In the second showcase showdown, the first two contestants spun over a dollar.
Okay.
So Sharon went to the showcase by default.
Okay.
So just to recap, so far, every single contestant has won their pricing game mm-hmm. except Terry.
Right.
But he had the perfect bid on the green right. egg.
Right.
And Zachary didn't win the full amount, but only mm-hmm. because he didn't keep playing. He had actually played a perfect game.
Okay.
So with those two exceptions, it's been a perfect show.
Yeah. Okay. They've
given Ooh. Away a lot of prizes, including uh-huh. two new cars.
Dangerous.
Yeah. So it's a very unusual lucky streak for mm-hmm. one episode and also a very expensive one.
Yes.
So the showcase round was Sharon and Terry. Because mm-hmm. Sharon won the most money, she got to pick which showcase she wanted to bid on.
Okay.
And the first showcase contains a karaoke system, a pool table,
mm-hmm.
and a 17-foot travel trailer.
Okay.
And Sharon passed on the showcase and passed it to Terry, so he has to bid.
Okay.
And Terry bids $23,743.
Okay.
The second showcase is called Every Trip in the House. And it is 6-night stays in Chicago, Calgary, Edinburgh, and Cape Town.
Oh.
So 18,000 miles of travel total.
Mm-hmm.
And trips are notoriously very difficult to bid on because
yeah.
like the price could just fluctuate so much.
Totally.
So Sharon bids $30,525.
Okay.
And they cut for a commercial break. So after the break, Drew reveals the price of Sharon's showcase, and it was $31,019.
Wow. She's very close.
She's really close. A difference of $494.
Mm.
So that's a great bid, especially for a travel showcase. Like that just,
yes.
that just doesn't yeah. happen.
Right.
Like this bid would have been like what everyone was talking about if it weren't for what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
So then Drew walks over to Terry and he repeats that his bid for the first showcase was $23,743. And then he opens up his little envelope and he says, actual retail price,
$23,743. No.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Terry had a perfect bid on the showcase.
Wow.
Which then makes him a double showcase winner, and he gets mm-mm. all of the prizes. So that's $56,437 worth of prizes.
Wow.
And this is the first and only time that this has ever happened on The Price is Right. And it okay. should have been, like, it just... like an insane celebration moment mm-hmm. for everyone on the show.
Right.
But the way that Drew Carey delivered this news, like, I'll have to see if I can find and put in a little clip here because it's just a yeah. few seconds long. But it is totally deadpan.
No.
No excitement. He doesn't make a big deal out of this massive, monumental Price is Right historical moment at all.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And he almost seems like a little mad.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, welcome back, everybody. Sharon, in all those trips around the world, four big trips plus a safari in Africa, $30,525 actual retail price. $31,019. Difference of $494. Terry got the trailer, jukebox, at $23,743. Actual retail price, $23,743. You got it right on the nose.
I remember watching this episode.
Ooh, when
it was on TV. And I remember like not even being sure if Terry had actually had a perfect bid, like, or if I had misheard or something.
Yeah.
Because the reaction was so weird.
Ooh.
But there was a lot happening behind the scenes that we did not know about while this was unfolding.
Okay.
Okay. So it was already this almost perfect episode. Everyone's winning their prizes, which is great. But also the producers are looking at it thinking like, uh-oh, we're going to have to do some balancing here.
Yeah.
And then Terry bids on his showcase. And producer Kathy Greco is holding the official pricing list that has the actual retail prices. And she notices that Terry just placed a perfect bid on the showcase.
Mm.
And this was after he had a perfect bid on the green egg.
Yeah.
So she grabs Mike Richards and shows him the price list. And they're both like, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening?
Yeah.
So they stop taping. They pull Drew Carey backstage and tell him what's just happened. They're like, this was just an episode where everyone won. This man had a perfect bid on his one bid game, and now he has a perfect bid on the showcase.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And they are certain that Terry has cheated.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But he's just a random guy, and they're not allowed to bring price lists into the audience. So, like, how would he cheat?
Right.
So they think that the most likely way is that someone who is pissed about Robert Dobkowitz being fired from The Price is Right is trying to sabotage the show.
Oh, my gosh.
And has leaked the price list.
Conspiracy!
Yeah. They think someone has leaked the price list to a super fan in the audience.
Oh, my gosh.
But they don't think that the list was leaked to Terry.
Huh.
We'll come back to that in just a minute. But
Okay.
Basically, the producers decide, let's finish filming this, and then we'll just figure out what the hell happened. We'll probably end up throwing the entire episode out. Like, there's no way that this is ever going to make it to TV when someone obviously cheated.
Right.
And basically, if someone just cheated on The Price is Right, then, like, they've broken the show. So, we're going to be canceled.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, when the show comes back after the commercial break, like, this is what has just happened, this conversation.
Okay, yeah.
So, Drew Carey already knew that Terry's bid was perfect. And he's already heard from the producers, we think he's cheating. So he is not happy for Terry.
Sure. That makes sense. Okay.
And he also thinks like he's about to get fired.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah.
Like he's either going to be fired or the show will just...
Or the show's canceled. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's why his reaction was just like so flat.
Okay.
Like, he doesn't care. They're going to end up taking back all these prizes anyway. The show's never going to go on TV and he's pissed.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Okay, so this is what Terry says happened. He said that he and Linda had spent months studying, and they noticed that most of the prizes on the show repeated, including the big green egg.
Yes.
So by memorizing the prices to these items that they kept seeing again and again, they know that they have a pretty good shot at winning some of the games. And when Terry makes it to Contestants Row and sees the big green egg, he knows the exact price to the dollar because they've just been studying it.
Yeah.
And then as far as the showcase, Terry says that he's seen all of those prizes before, too. So he knew the karaoke machine was $1,000. He knew that all the pool tables that they had ever shown were somewhere between $2,800 and $3,200. So he goes in the middle and says $3,000. Mm-hmm. And he also knew from his studies that the rule of thumb for pricing trailers was $1,000 a foot.
Ah.
And he says that he misheard the length of the trailer and thought that it was 19 feet long.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
So he added $19,000 to his total, which put him then at $23,000. And from there, he says he randomly added on 743 because it was one of him and Linda's like special numbers. So like they used it for their pin codes. That was like, you know, when they played the lottery, it was part of their lottery numbers, like that kind of thing. Aww. So Terry says that the digits are a combination of their wedding date, which was the 7th of April, mm-hmm. and then Linda's birthday month of March.
Aww.
So according to Terry, he came up with this perfect bid kind of like just due to a mix of memorizing prices and then just sheer luck.
Wow.
But like I said, the producers have a different theory, and they thought that Roger Dobkowitz or someone upset about his firing had leaked that information to a fan of the show. And they think that that fan was the person sitting next to Terry and Linda in the audience,
Ooh.
Who was a man named Ted Slauson.
Okay. That name sounds so familiar.
Yeah.
So familiar.
After this all happened, he was kind of like talked about a lot of places.
Okay. Okay.
So Ted Slauson has been a Price is Right super fan for decades by that point. He became fascinated with the show in his childhood, you know, the same way the rest of us did. But I watched a documentary about him. They never said this, so I don't want to like just diagnose people, but he definitely had traits that one would find in someone who has some kind of neurodivergence.
Okay.
Where he gets like very into and focused on his hobbies.
Yeah.
So, like Terry, Ted noticed when he was watching that the Price is Right seemed to recycle prizes.
Mm-hmm.
And he began keeping detailed spreadsheets with pricing information, like as a child he was doing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And then as soon as he turned 18, he started going to LA as often as he possibly could to be in the Price is Right audience and get a chance to be on Contestants Row.
Yeah.
So from 1989 to 1992, Ted was in the audience at over 20 tapings.
Wow.
Yeah, so he became really well known by a lot of the people who worked on The Price is Right, and Bob Barker would often reference him by name.
Okay.
And like everyone knew that Ted knew his stuff. He was just really good at all of the prices.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was kind of like close to like a savant level of just knowledge of all of these prices. He had thousands of them memorized.
Wow.
He was also a mathematics assessment specialist for an educational testing company.
Well,
yeah. So he was just really, really good with like probabilities and odds and just, he just had all everything that you could want in a Price is Right contestant. So when Ted was finally called to come on down on July 15th, 1992, Bob greeted him by saying, "You made it. You made it. Theodore has been a loyal friend and true."
Aww.
So Ted made it to the stage with a perfect bid on a $599 Brookline Contemporary Rocka Lounger.
Okay. Yep.
And he played the pricing game Punch a Bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Which, unfortunately for Ted's skill set, just involves a lot of luck.
Yeah.
But he played it as perfectly as was possible. He stopped when he got $1,000 on his first punch. And when the next three punches were revealed by Barker, they were all for $500 or less.
Okay, but, good choices. Yeah.
Yeah. But when he made it to the big wheel, none of that. All of that work could help him. It's just spinning a wheel.
Yeah. Right.
So he spun for 55 cents and then he was knocked out of the running by a 70 cent spin from the next contestant. And that was it. He had gotten on the show, won, you know, $1,000 and was that.
Okay.
At the time, the rule stated that contestants could only play once in their lifetime.
Oh, okay.
So Ted started focusing on other hobbies. He still watched The Price is Right for fun, but he didn't travel to try to get on the show anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But then they updated the eligibility requirements to allow contestants to appear on the show once every 10 years.
Ooh, okay.
So starting in 2002, Ted had another shot at his dreams.
Yeah.
And by then, his training techniques had gotten even better. He had started capturing stills from the TV show to make into electronic flashcards on his computer.
My God.
And yeah. He built a computer simulation of every single pricing game on The Price is Right to practice.
Wow. People are amazing.
Yes. By the time he returned to LA, he could list off the prices of over 1,300 prizes in under an hour.
Oh my gosh.
So that May, Ted helped a stranger named Brandon, who he met in line before the show, hit a perfect bid from contestants' row on a gas grill. Brandon looked back at Ted, and Ted signaled 1554 with his hands, and Brandon repeated it to Bob, and it was a perfect bid. When Brandon went up on stage, Bob asked him if he'd seen the prize on the show before, and Brandon said no, he'd taken the bid from someone in the audience.
Ah, yeah.
With Ted's help, Brandon also won his pricing game and his showcase for a total of nearly $40,000 in prizes, including two new cars.
Wow.
And like during the taping, as he kept winning and winning, there were a lot of jokes about Brandon splitting the winnings with Ted, who was helping the audience, but that never happened. But Ted didn't really care. He just really liked helping nice people win.
Aw.
And he liked the attention that he got for this like encyclopedia of knowledge.
Yeah, totally.
He was like kind of a celebrity in this niche Price is Right world.
Yeah.
So he was friendly with a lot of the crew. You know, other people who went to the tapings frequently knew him by sight. And when Terry Neese got the perfect bid on the showcase, he did so after looking back at where Ted Slauson was seated in the audience, which also was, you know, close to his wife.
Right.
But Kathy Greco and the other producers knew Ted. They knew that he was this super fan who had been around since the 1970s.
Yeah.
And they were sure that Ted had somehow gotten the price list and was purposefully ruining the show because he was mad about Roger Dobkowitz leaving.
Huh.
So according to Ted, he did know the exact price of Terry Neese's showcase down to the dollar. Okay. He said that he met Terry and Linda in line that morning and they spent a lot of time talking and Ted really liked them.
Yeah.
So he decided that if one of them made it on the stage and he didn't, he wanted to help them win.
Yeah.
So he says that he had the prices for the prizes in the showcase memorized. And like, honestly, when you see this guy's spreadsheet, it seems totally plausible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Terry Neese knew that a pool table was somewhere in this range of 2,800 to 3,200. Like Ted Slauson had lists of the exact price of each individual model of the pool tables and knew every single one. So Ted says that he added up all the prices and got $23,743. Okay. And then he leaned over and told Linda Neese what he'd just added up. And he said that he even then checked his math again and repeated it to her. And then when Terry looked behind him to help with his showcase bid, Linda and Ted both signaled the amount that Ted had just told her to Terry.
Oh, okay.
Ted says that when he came back to the set for the afternoon taping, the show's producers had moved his seat in the audience so that the other contestants couldn't see him. But ultimately, the show's producers could not find any evidence that Terry or Ted had cheated.
Yeah.
So Terry did end up receiving all of the prizes that he won.
Okay.
Ted heard afterwards through unofficial channels that he was now banned from attending tapings of The Price is Right. But he never like went back to test that information. Just afterwards, he just had a really bad taste in his mouth after being a fan for so long and then being accused of cheating.
Right.
Terry has said that he has been asked by several casinos not to sit at their blackjack tables.
Oh my
gosh.
Because
they think that he's a cheater.
Oh.
I mean, he does know how to count cards, so.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then in the aftermath of the airing of Terry's episode, there was a lot of talk, a lot of like talk about possible conspiracy theories. both Terry and Ted were accused very widely of somehow cheating. Ugh. But again, it's never been proven.
Yeah.
Terry remains adamant that he did not get his bid from Ted, but acknowledges that Ted's extensive knowledge of the show prices could mean that while Ted was sitting in the audience, he also got that same answer that Terry did. And it was just coincidence that they both arrived at that same price, which, like, seems possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Terry and Linda ended up selling the karaoke machine and the pool table and the trailer. But they did go on all the trips that he won. And he said that they were all amazing.
Good.
In total, Ted Slauson attended 37 tapings of The Price is Right.
Wow.
He still has a large collection of memorabilia from the show, including all of his name tags from when he attended, but he no longer watches the show. And neither does Terry Neese.
Wow.
Neither of them liked the way that the show's producers treated them like they were criminals.
Right.
When, like, the most exciting thing in the history of The Price is Right had just happened.
I know. Ugh.
And in the aftermath of that perfect bid, the show went on to make a lot of changes to ensure that it never happened again. So they began changing up their brands more often, and they added a ton of luxury products that most people don't ever see, like, on a regular basis. So it's a lot harder to memorize prices.
Yeah.
And they also began using a lot of packages for their bigger prizes. So, like, you know, like when you buy a car, there's like a billion different packages that you can get with, like, different floor mats and heated seats or whatever.
Yeah.
So by changing, like, one item in a car, they could change the MSRP. So
you would, why weren't they just doing that to begin with, though? Like, it's weird that, like, of course someone's going to catch on if you're using the same prices.
Right. And,
or,
like,
prizes. Yeah, there's some very committed people out there.
But, like, that was kind of the entire point of the show.
True.
Right? Is
yeah,
that, like,
yeah,
it's designed to be accessible to everyday people.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
These are the things that, like, you see when you're in the grocery store.
Right.
And it was designed to reward people like Ted, who watched every single episode.
That's very true. Yeah.
And when people, like, won pricing games because they knew the exact price of the items, Bob Barker would always say, it pays to watch The Price is Right every day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, like, even if Ted Slauson had somehow been leaked pricing information and shouted it from the audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, the chances of anyone ever going to the extent that these two men did to memorize the prices of all of these prizes, like,
yeah,
don't they deserve to win?
Yeah, seriously.
And, you know, Terry Ness either way wouldn't have done anything wrong, because getting answers from the audience is, like, it's what you do.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Ugh.
So in a 2010 interview, Bob Barker said that if he'd been hosting when Terry Neese made his perfect bid, he would have treated him like he was the greatest game show contestant that ever lived.
Yeah. And it would have been good for the show, too. I feel like people would be really excited about that.
Yeah. And people would think, like, oh, if I watch every day, I could learn the prices and win. That's, I mean, like, isn't that, like, what the dream is of every TV show, to build, like, a loyal viewership that is going to watch every single episode?
That's literally the point of television.
So the whole thing just made it end up seeming like the new Price is Right team, like, didn't want people to actually win, which was, like, the antithesis of Bob Barker's approach. And it ended up really hurting the credibility of the show's entire premise.
Yeah.
I feel really bad for Terry.
I know.
You deserve better. But The Price is Right was not canceled like Drew Carey feared. He wasn't even fired. Mm-hmm. The show is still on the air today. And even though we still think of Drew Carey as, like, the new guy, he's been hosting for over 16 years now.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Oh, my God. No, that just happened.
I know.
Don't like that.
Bob Barker died on August 26th, mm-hmm. 2023 of Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. He was 99 years old, which of course sparked a lot of jokes about making it as close to 100 as possible without going over.
Oh no! Oh no! He would have appreciated that, I think. I think he would have been.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
I know. Drew Carey hosted a television special honoring Bob and featuring clips of his best Price is Right hosting moments. And there's no denying that Bob Barker was an absolute TV game show legend. He mm-hmm. was just the best at what yeah. he did. And he used his platform to champion animal rights, which was very sweet. Mm-hmm. But it also seems like he could certainly be an absolute monster, especially to the women that he worked with.
Yep.
So, you know, just,
yeah,
I don't know. Okay. So to round us out, here are just a few fun facts about The Price is Right that I didn't think to include
okay.
in other parts. So in 1987, Bob Barker stopped dyeing his hair and became one of the only hosts on daytime TV to go gray. But the decision okay. actually caused a massive boost in the show's ratings.
Okay.
People really liked his dapper gray hair.
Yeah.
Before he became famous as Jesse Pinkman on Breaking Bad, actor Aaron Paul was a contestant on a 2000 episode of The Price is Right.
Phenomenal.
He got to contestants' row by bidding on a desk and made it all the way to the showcase.
No! Uh-huh. Oh my god.
But both he and the other contestant bid over on their showcases. So no one
okay.
won.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can find clips of him on the show, and he was so excited.
Oh.
There is no option to take the cash value of the prizes you win on The Price is Right.
Okay.
And winners have to pay taxes up mm-hmm. front to get their prizes.
Up front?
Yes. Yes. So for this reason, some winners don't ever collect on their prizes.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah, cuz if you win like, you know, $50,000 worth of stuff and you're paying probably a luxury goods tax on that.
Yeah.
That's not many people have that kind of money laying around.
No. No. Oh, yeah. That sucks. I knew you had to pay taxes, but I didn't know it was like right away.
I didn't either. So like even though they have the prizes there, usually like the people go home, they have to pay the taxes, and then they'll send mm-hmm. send the prizes.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. And one time a contestant turned down a $10,000 cash prize because he did not want to have to split it with his ex-wife.
Oh, the spite.
In 2013, a woman from Tacoma, Washington won one of the most expensive cars ever featured on the show, an Audi R8 V8 Spider valued at $157,300.
Oh my god, did she pay the taxes on it?
I don't know.
That's a good question. Did she actually get it?
I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
But the most expensive vehicle ever featured was a Ferrari 458 Spider, which was priced at $285,716.
That's more than I bought my house for. Like,
yeah. Yep.
Too much for a car.
For a car that is ugh. Not like you couldn't even live in it if you had to because it's so tiny.
Tiny.
Plinko is the most popular game on The Price is Right, and it is also the most valuable. There are only 10 Plinko chips in existence, and they are considered so special that they are locked away after every use.
Okay.
It's estimated that Bob Barker received over 22,000 kisses on the cheek from contestants during his tenure on The Price is Right.
Oh my gosh.
In 1990, Bob Barker told the Los Angeles Times that a woman in the audience once went into labor during a break in filming.
Oh my God.
And Barker told the crew to go help her. And the woman said, "I don't want to go. You might call my name."
Oh my God.
And Barker responded with, "Madam, we are not going to call any more names until you are on your way to the hospital." Since its debut, The Price is Right has given away more than $300 million in cash and prizes, including more than 8,400 cars.
Wow.
And that is what I know about The Price is Right.
That was phenomenal. Oh my gosh. That was so fun.
I can't believe I just talked for almost 2 hours about The Price is Right.
It's so funny, though, because it's just such like a collective experience. I don't know what it is. It's, yeah.
Yeah, wow. I think it's some, you know, something to do with like, yeah, that idea that like anyone could win.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be a genius like you do on Jeopardy.
Right.
You just, you notice prices.
Yeah. Thanks, capitalism.
Yeah.
Oh, that was fantastic. I loved it.
Oh, great. Well, I do have some recommendations.
Okay.
So this was a little challenging. But for fiction, I went with books that featured participation in a television show as a central plot point.
Perfect.
So for fiction, first we have the classic The Running Man by Stephen King.
Uh-huh.
Also published under the pen name Richard Bachman. So if you've never heard of The Running Man, the synopsis is Ben Richards is a desperate man with no job, no money, no way out, and a young daughter in need of proper medical attention. He must turn to the only possibility of striking it rich in this near future dystopian America, participating in the ultra violent TV programming of the government sanctioned games network. Ben soon finds himself selected as a contestant on the biggest and the best that the Games Network has to offer, The Running Man, a no-holds-barred 30-day struggle to stay alive as public enemy number one, relentlessly hunted by an elite strike force bent on killing him as quickly as possible in front of an audience all too eager to see that happen. It means $1 billion in prize money if he can live for the next month. No one has ever survived longer than 8 days.
Ah.
Okay. The next one is The Book of Essie by Megan McLean Weir. This is the story of a fictional reality TV show called Six for Hicks. The reality show follows an evangelical family. Unfortunately, Essie, the youngest child in the Hicks family, has just become pregnant and doesn't fit with the television show's squeaky clean image. As Essie's parents consult with the show's producers about what to do, plan a wedding, sneak Essie out of the country, Essie starts questioning everything she once believed about her family and her faith.
Good girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then that sounds really good.
I know. I think it's a YA.
Yeah. Okay.
The next one, I feel like, have you talked about A Head Full of Ghosts?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought
I love this. It's probably my favorite horror. Recent horror novel, like relatively recent. I love this book so much.
Yes. So if you want something in the horror genre that is also connected to TV, A Head Full of Ghosts by Paul Tremblay. So the blurb is, when the Barrett's daughter Marjorie begins showing signs of schizophrenia and no amount of therapy seems to help, a local Catholic priest suggests an exorcism. And since the Barretts are short on money and drowning in medical bills, they agree to allow the whole thing to be filmed for a new reality television series called The Possession. The show becomes a huge success, and 15 years later, people are still talking about it, even Marjorie's younger sister, Mary.
So good.
And then the next one is going on my to-be-read list right now. It's called Chain Gang All-Stars by Nana Kwam Ajay Brinya.
Mm.
I listened to him pronounce his name like 10 times before we recorded, so I hope I got that right.
Mm.
Okay, so part of the blurb says, Loretta Thurwar and Hamara Hurricane Stacks Stacker are the stars of the Chain Gang All-Stars, the cornerstone of CAPE, or Criminal Action Penal Entertainment, a highly popular, highly controversial profit-raising program in America's increasingly dominant private prison industry.
It's the return that could happen.
Of the gladiators, and prisoners are competing for the ultimate prize, their freedom.
Wow. Wow.
That sounds so good. And
it does sound good.
Realistic.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. gosh. So that's terrifying.
Yeah. Okay, and then for nonfiction, first up, mm-hmm. Priceless Memories by Bob mm-hmm. Barker. This is Bob's official autobiography, published in 2011. And in it, Bob tells about his personal life from being raised on a Native American reservation to his training as a Navy pilot to his success in TV. He shares stories about his favorite contestants, episodes, and behind-the-scenes happening. I'm sure he doesn't mention those many lawsuits.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, all the accusations of sexual harassment.
But skims if, over those, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if you're a fan of The Price is Right and you want to hear stories that only Bob Barker would know,
yeah,
that would be a good book for it. And the audiobook is also narrated by Bob. So if you're, okay. you know, want to close your eyes and pretend that you're homesick from school. The next one is Backstage at The Price is Right, Memoirs of a Barker Beauty by Kathleen Bradley. Oh,
okay.
So alternatively, if you want a grittier telling of what was happening behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
this is the memoir from the first Black model to join the show.
Okay.
The blurb in part says, every weekday for 10 years, over 16 million viewers watched the glamorous model hostess Kathleen Bradley on The Price is Right. Women envied her, girls aspired to be her, and Bradley was living her dream, but it all came at a price. As a pioneer in television game history, Bradley takes readers on a first-class tour from the parking lot at CBS Television Studio City in Hollywood through the artist's entrance to the production meetings, rehearsals, wardrobe, and straight to the lights, camera, action. She reveals the catfights, the betrayals, dirty little secrets, the depositions and lawsuits, the ugly truth, and the reality of what really went on behind the scenes before and after the cameras rolled.
Wow.
This is, it seems like it is a really scathing account of working on The Price is Right. I haven't read it yet. I was hoping that I could find it on audiobook, but I have not been able to.
Okay.
And then just as like a more general overview of game shows, I recommend Game Show Confidential, The Story of an American Obsession by Bose Hadley.
Okay.
The blurb says, this book describes the evolution of the game show, its larger-than-life producers and hosts, as well as the scandals that have rocked it from time to time, including bloopers from such adult-oriented shows as The Dating Game, The Newlywed Game, and Hollywood Squares. This is an entertaining and lively look at an American phenomenon whose popularity doesn't seem to be going away. And Library Journal says, offered more for information than extensive sociological analysis, this is an entertaining treat for nostalgia and trivia lovers.
Okay. I wonder if they have any information on It's Time to Know Your Boo. Is that what it was called?
Know Your Boo.
Know Your Boo.
I don't remember something like that. Oh my God.
Yep.
I would watch that show in real life.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, amazing.
And then for other media, the documentary film Perfect Bid, The Contestant Who Knew Too Much by C.J. Wallace.
Yeah.
This film tells the entire story of Ted Slauson's lifelong obsession with The Price is Right and how it ended up colliding with Terry Neese's Perfect Bid.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. It had a lot of old Price is Right clips with Ted, which were really fun to watch. You can find it for free a bunch of places, including Peacock, Prime Video, Hoopla, Canopy, or Tubi.
I feel like I might have seen this, and that's why his name sounded so familiar.
Really?
I think so. Because parts of it, I was like, wait, this is like something in the back of my head is telling me I know this, but I didn't know all. Yeah, I think I might have seen it.
Yeah, it was really fun. It's not like the highest quality documentary I've ever watched, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah. So do you have a funny review for us?
I do. So this is a Goodreads review for I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, which is, of course, one of Maya Angelou's autobiographies.
Mm-hmm.
And Dawn's review says, Dawn, D-A-W-N, I don't know if that makes a difference. One-star review, not a keeper. I've determined to read the classics, especially the ones on my own shelves. The book has historical value as to the struggles of the Deep South that helped me understand the past, but I seem to have missed why the title wasn't included in the story better. What? Did I miss something? It could have been better titled, Maya, All About Me.
It's her fucking autobiography. Like, what do you think you're reading?
Why are so many reviews like that? Why do they?
Get
oh
it.
My God.
Yeah. Yeah. So
also, it's been many years since I've read that book, but I think I clearly remember the title being like included in a titular part of yes, the story.
I think so. Yeah. It's been a very long time. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure.
Oh, my God.
The audacity of some people talking about themselves in their autobiography. I just can't even.
Well, what dare they? Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Gross.
What about you?
Yeah. So I have a 1-star review of Les Misérables by Victor Hugo.
Fantastic.
Okay. So it says, stealing is stealing. Whether a loaf of bread in France or the gold toilet in Trump Tower, this shouldn't be condoned by a society, and especially not in a book the size of my hands, if you know what I mean. Up yours, little Marco.
Oh, no.
And I don't know what they mean by a book the size of their hands.
If you know what I mean.
I don't. Is that...
I don't.
Is that an innuendo? I don't know.
I guess he's big mad. Stealing is stealing. Oh, no.
Imagine taking that stance on Les Mis.
Quite true.
Oh, my God. If any of you have funny book reviews that you've stumbled across, yes, please send them our way. We would love to share them.
Yes. They're so fun.
Yeah.
Just
they really
so fun.
Are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was so good.
Oh, well, I hope that in these terrible times that we can all embrace the feeling of being cuddled on the couch, watching mm-hmm. The Price is Right.
Mm-hmm. And you called it definitely with some saltines.
Mm-hmm. With some saltines, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Reference Desk.
If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
If you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/thereferencedesk.
And if you're interested in purchasing any of the books we discussed today, visit our bookshop storefront at bookshop.org/thereferencedeskpod.
You can find us on Instagram at thereferencedeskpod. Visit our website at thereferencedeskpod.com or drop us an email at referencedeskpod@gmail.com.
This episode was written and produced by us.
Our music is C'est Salavi by Eric Harper, and our cover art for the show is by Maria Amaya.
Until next week, we'll see you in the stacks.